This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. For a certain kind of comedy nerd, and yes, it is the type of comedy nerd that I am, it doesn't get much better these days than Cola Scola. They're a New York-based actor, writer, and comedian. They've written for Hacks, Z-Way, and the other two. As a performer, maybe you've seen them on Difficult People, the great comedy from Julie Klausner and Billy Eichner, or on Search Party, where they played Chip, the obsessive stalker turned kidnapper.
Shaved?
Oh. Yes. I'm sorry. I needed your hair to make my Dory doll's hair more authentic. I was cutting it and then it was an even. I got carried away and I just messed up.
But you look surprisingly great. I think we should keep this look for you.
Oh. I know. You have been through so much.
When they perform, Cole brings a very specific energy. They alternate wildly between insecurity and confidence, delivering one laugh-out-loud one-liner after another. It's unhinged in the best way possible. Imagine if Dave Foley and Amy Sedaris violently merged into one extremely funny comedic brain, and that's kind of what you get with Cole Escola. In fact, they have worked with Amy Sedaris a whole bunch. Escola played Chassie Tucker on At Home with Amy Sedaris. Chassie was Amy's friend, neighbor, and employee.
Happy birthday, Amy.
Chassie, that's so thoughtful. Well,
that's what good friends do.
Oh, there's no I in my name.
You know what? You are so wrapped up in your own little world that you are completely blind to the fact that everyone here caters to you.
Well, if you wanted to know how to spell my name, you could have looked at any of the checks that you get from this show. Oh.
Escola's latest work, though, is not on the small screen. It's also not on the big screen. It's called Oh Mary. It's a play written by Escola, a brilliant and hilarious play. It is currently running at the Lucille Lortel Theater in New York City's West Village, and this summer, it's going to hit Broadway. Escola stars as the play's title character, Mary Todd Lincoln. Not really the Mary Todd Lincoln who actually existed, the one you'd learn about if you read a book about Mary Todd Lincoln. Cole Escola's Mary Todd Lincoln lives in the White House and is married to Abraham Lincoln, and that is pretty much all of the historical facts contained in the entire play. This is a venal Mary Todd Lincoln, a deeply alcoholic Mary Todd Lincoln, a very, very, very dumb Mary Todd Lincoln. A Mary Todd Lincoln who dreams not of an end to the Civil War or to see her deceased children again, but rather to perform cabaret, as she did before she met Honest Abe.
Not this again! You wanted out when you met me, remember?
Well, now I've met you enough and I want back in.
No, I forbid it! You are not going back to that!
It has a name.
It doesn't deserve one.
Say it!
No!
The thing I love more than anything
on earth!
Don't you dare
say it!
Is cabaret!
That's it! Get out!
Please, let me go back to it,
Abe! No, it's inappropriate! We're at war!
With who?
The South!
Of what?
Cole, welcome to Bullseye. I'm so happy and excited to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
This is an obvious question, and I'm sorry to ask you such an obvious question, but why Mary Todd Lincoln?
Oh, I was just dreading that question. I was trying to actually think if I have a real answer. I don't know. That's like asking, how do you have an idea? I don't know why. I just had the idea, and I thought it was funny. I just wish I had a better answer for that. question. Like, I wish I was, I could say, like, well, you know, it was 2020 and we were all so isolated. I just started doing research. But the truth is, I just thought of it. And
I feel like what I know about Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln, which is, I have not read Cabinet of Rivals or whatever it's called. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Only from vague inferences from being a public radio listener and high school, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Abraham Lincoln, weird, and shared a bed with his best friend, but also maybe wasn't gay, mm-hmm. but maybe was. Mm-hmm. And Mary Todd Lincoln, troubled.
Troubled, yeah. And loved shopping. And they both ignored their children. But then she, I guess, was very, you know, heartbroken over the loss of her children. I mean, not surprisingly. But no, I wanted everyone to have the... I wrote the show from the same third grade knowledge that I feel the audience had. Yeah.
I think one of the things that it has in common with a lot of your imaginations of middle-aged women mm-hmm. is that it combines kind of a plain specificity with a kind of fantastical mm-hmm. quality. Mm-hmm. Like it exists in a kind of odd imaginary miracle world, rather than as a mere kind of extrapolation of what you know about her historically. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. It's more me than it is Mary Todd Lincoln, the character. Yeah.
What about it is you?
You know, I'm sort of playing out my deepest insecurities and fears that everyone thinks I'm annoying. My secret love and desire to be a cabaret star. Mostly just that I'm repulsive and annoying to people, and they're talking about that behind my back.
Have you ever done cabaret?
Yeah. Yeah. It was bad. It's boring to watch someone sing that isn't great at it.
Do you have cabaret heroes? Like, you've performed as Bernadette Peters for years.
She's more of a concert queen than a cabaret star. I mean, you can't beat Marilyn May. Elaine Stritch, Dorothy Loudon has this album from the 50s of her at the Blue Angel, like her old cabaret act. Lots of just like soundboard recordings of from bootlegs of, you know, these old cabaret divas.
Are you like tape trading cabaret shows like they were the Grateful Dead?
Well, now the internet has kind of ruined that, you know, like now you just find them. But there was like a time when I first came to New York, it was like, oh, you have to go to Ben's if you want to watch Patti LuPone at Les Mouches. That was fun. It was like treasure hunting, you know. But now, you know, I say the internet's ruined it. It's made it better, easier to find those things.
Let's hear a little bit of my guest, Cola Scola, as Bernadette Peters. And this is Bernadette Peters at the accountant doing her taxes.
Have you made any charitable donations in the past year?
Yes, I gave all my earnings to Elaine Page. P-A-I-G.
That's a charity?
Well, yeah, you can say that.
Do you have any paper that they would have sent you?
Yes, I was sent this paper.
This is insurance for an iPod. Social security number, please.
3.
What I really enjoy about this is a very specific sort of loopiness, which is, I mean, like there's a line reading in there where he says, is that a charity? And Bernadette Peters says, you could say that. And I feel like well, you could say that is like one level of loopiness. And you could say that is like a whole other level of loopiness. there's a few of those for Mary Todd Lincoln too. These things where it's a pretty regular joke, but you give it the weird wrong line reading that turns it into an insane person.
Yeah. Thank you. I mean, with Bernadette Peters and Mary Todd Lincoln, both are sort of, there's just like, well, I guess Mary Todd Lincoln was a big personality, but in terms of like we know about her as a culture, there's a lot of stuff that can be filled in. And with Bernadette Peters, it's the same. There's a lot we don't know about her. So it's fun to make up stuff that is so obviously completely wrong.
When did you become interested in specifically the world of a 50-year-old woman, just the far side of middle age?
I was sort of raised by my grandma, and I think it's, you know, an obsession with her, an obsession for all, you know, like every, this is like every gay person's origin story of like just finding the older women who will like protect you during recess. And then they become your protector, and also you swear allegiance to them.
I saw a photo shoot of you in your apartment, and I'll say that there were a lot of porcelain figurines.
Well, let's be careful there. What is a lot? More than five?
I would say more than two counts as a lot.
Okay, then yeah,
2024.
What other? Yeah.
I mean, that is a commitment to an older lady lifestyle that goes beyond, you know, comic portrayals. You know what I mean?
It's a comfort. It's just what I like. It's just my taste. Yeah.
Have you ever thought about what your
Every
life
day.
Would?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
What your life would be like in middle age? Because you haven't quite hit it, but you're headed that direction.
I'm a stone's throw away. I don't know. Maybe I'll feel more like myself finally. We'll never know, because I'll never get there. I'll just stay punkish and puckish forever.
I want to play a clip of you in this faux television commercial that you made for the internet. And it's you kind of in a kitchen dressed in the, you know, in the classic television commercial mom manner, with like a manageable but attractive haircut, and I mean wig, and a tasteful outfit. Let's take a listen.
For instance, did you know that one glass of the leading brand of orange juice contains twice the amount of sugar your kids should be getting in a day? When I found that out, I lost it. I mean, I had been giving my kids leading brand orange juice their whole lives. I thought, my God, if I'm capable of that, what else am I capable of? So I panicked. I had to get out. I took the plates off my Honda and I just started driving, and the sun was setting, and I would pass an exit and I would think, Ellen, turn around. But I couldn't turn around. I ended up in Arizona. I put myself up at a motel behind a P.F. Chang's in Scottsdale. Where is this gal in the room next to me. Her name was Puka, like the shell. Of course I knew that wasn't her real name. But who was I to judge? Wasn't I hiding something too?
It's a really dark tale she tells.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was there something that you were watching or something that you were thinking about when you decided to find that incredibly dark place?
I'm just a dark person. I just have a lot of darkness in my at my reach. But I've always loved and been obsessed with moms on television and wives, you know, in sitcoms and on commercials, and the way femininity is marketed. You know, like the difference between in a commercial geared towards moms, it's like, ooh, careful, don't slip up, don't worry, we've got you covered. But if it's, you know, if it's a dad in the commercial, it's like, hey, he's trying, let's help him out. Yeah, but I especially things like chocolate, the way chocolate is marketed to women, as if like you shouldn't, but you could, like reward yourself with a one little square of chocolate. That stuff is, it's just so funny.
There's such a sadness built into it. I think of yogurt a lot, like commercials for yogurt.
Absolutely. No one has to know that I'm having yogurt at night.
The subtext of that is this kind of immense pain and loneliness of
under the umbrella of You Go Girl.
Right. Yeah. Like of a life where like your great pleasure is yogurt. Like no offense to yogurt. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yogurt's nice and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, it's not even as nice as it should be given how much sugar is in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's a real B-minus treat.
Yeah. Yeah. Dove chocolate, just like low calorie cookies, just all things that are like marketed as like, ooh, ladies, look what we did for you. You work hard. Put the kids to bed and have one cookie. It's very funny and it's very dark.
We have more to get into with Cole Escola. Escola is non-binary and only relatively recently asked people to start using they, them pronouns to refer to them. We'll talk about why they didn't feel comfortable doing it sooner. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card, issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval, terms apply.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Proven Winners Color Choice Shrubs, who believes that plants and gardening are for everyone. With over 25 years of developing, trialing, and testing some of the most recognized flowering shrubs and evergreens on the market, Proven Winners Color Choice makes it easy to transform dull yards into vibrant, colorful landscapes. Ready to spruce up your yard this spring? Proven Winners Color Choice created the Gardening Simplified Landscape Guide to help you get started with tried and true elements of good planting design. Identify the roles you want new plants to play in your outdoor space, like ground covers, climbers, or attracting pollinators. Then browse garden plans and see which layouts and plants can bring your vision to life. Proven Winners Color Choice shrubs are available in the distinctive white containers at garden centers nationwide. Learn more at provenwinnerscolorchoice.com/NPR.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Cole Escola. They're a writer and actor who has worked on shows like Hacks, Difficult People, and At Home with Amy Sedaris. Escola created and stars in the play Oh Mary, in which they play a dumb, crazy, cabaret-singing Mary Todd Lincoln. That play makes its Broadway debut this June. You should absolutely see it if you can. It is so funny. Let's get back into our conversation. What do you think is your relationship to camp in portraying women?
I don't think of it as, I'm not ever like, this is funny because I'm playing a woman. I sort of forget that that is a layer of it for some people watching. But I forget that I'm, you know, like when I read comments that are like, oh, I didn't realize that was a man. And I'm like, oh, why would you, A, why do you care? And B, what, I don't know. I just forget that's a layer of it for people. And then as far as camp goes, I don't really know what camp means.
I mean, I think even in Mary Todd Lincoln, which is a big and ridiculous character, mm-hmm. as you portray mm-hmm. her, I mean, like defined by an insane lust for alcohol and stardom, mm-hmm. And idiocy.
Yeah.
Sort of all combined together.
Which is like, all me.
Like none of it is the classic hyper-real version of that usually comes from men dressed as women doing something campy. Like mm-hmm. whether it's straight guys or gay guys, you know, there's sort of two versions of that. But like they're both typically more about the idea of the thing than they are the idea of the person than they are about the person, mm-hmm. or the idea of that person's social category than they are about the person.
Yeah. Yeah. This is definitely about the character, which again, it's just aspects of myself turned up to a million. And I like playing people that are just the worst fears I have about myself, that I'm too much, that I'm annoying. Yeah, mostly that I'm too much and that I'm annoying, that I'm unlikable, that I, you know, I have no redeeming qualities, especially with portrayals of like females in history. There's this sort of, they have to have like redeeming qualities, but redeeming qualities decided on by the producers that audiences like will be able to digest. It's like, okay, yes, she was a murderer, but let's have this moment where she like she looks at her daughter sleeping and we see in her eyes that she just wants a better life for her. And it's like, what if you just showed the ugly part? Like, what if, why does she have to have these like they have to have these like soft maternal redeeming qualities, or else, you know, the director, producers, whatever, will think, well, then they'll hate her. Why would they root for a woman that just wants to be a star and doesn't like her husband or her kids? Yeah.
I mean, I think Mary Todd Lincoln in your show is ultimately an appealing, likable character, despite being, you know, venal and borderline evil, because of her sort of passion and ambition and vision for her life, which is like something that is very common for male comedy characters. I mean, that's like half of Will Ferrell's characters, the evil, you know, all the non-elf Will Ferrell characters.
Yeah. Just like a big baby, basically.
Yeah, that you like admire because they're doing their thing, right? Like we love to see somebody do their thing.
They're doing their thing. They're doing the thing you can't do. You know, like that's what has been so, like what I've loved so much about doing the show is people loving this character, and I think because they connect with her ugly desires, which we all have.
Everyone wants to have a cabaret act. I know I do.
Everyone wants. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
I was surprised, touched, concerned to read you describing your hesitation to use they, them pronouns
mm-hmm.
because of being concerned about being annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was your concern?
Oh, just, you know, like, that's always my biggest fear is that I'm annoying. That's just another example of like where my mind went when I thought about using they, them pronouns, which as my friend sort of helped me put it, it's not so much a coming out as like a clarification of like how I've already always been feeling and operating, not like, okay, now I'm living my life differently. But I was, you know, like scared that I would be excluded from things because people would have sort of like the same fears that I had before I started using they, them pronouns, that I would be afraid to interact with someone who was non-binary and used they, them pronouns because I just a small secret fear of like, don't get it wrong, don't get it wrong, don't get it wrong. Yeah, so I just sort of was thinking about that in regards to myself, like, oh, I don't want to make other people uncomfortable or scared to be talking to me. But so far, no one has died. And that I know of.
There's this thing that I've seen with people who change their pronouns in public mm-hmm. where they sometimes feel like I've seen people feel obliged to make it very clear that they're chill about it.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, obviously to the extent people are chill about it, you know, good for them. I'm glad that it's the, you know, if that's actually the case, good for you. But it also always, it's always such a sadness that someone in declaring who they are has to protect others, you know,
yeah.
over something yeah. so little, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It is, and it is so little. It's so sad. It's just like, oh, don't mind me. I'm not going to take up any space. And if you get it wrong, I won't even correct you. And frankly, you don't even have to ever do it. But for the most part, everyone's been cool about it. No one, I can't believe I'm saying this, but no one has died from it yet.
You said that fear of being annoying or too much is one that you had long before you were deciding whether to use they, them pronouns in the world.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? Like, did you have experiences that gave you that fear, or were you just always adjusting against it?
Well, part of it is being that, you know, I was a very femme gay child and, you know, was sort of guided or instructed to like, tone that down or curb that. That's part of it. And also I am just by nature sort of a brat. I'm a brat. Yeah. I had a lot of needs that my family couldn't accommodate, you know, for like artistic outlets. You know, my family knew how to take you to T-ball practice or, you know, sign you up for swimming, but like theater, I mean, they were great. They did everything they could, but you know, that I sort of took that on as like, ooh, I'm too much. I'm annoying because I need a ride to a different town where they have a theater program. Like I'm too needy.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's maybe, you know, there's a sort of spectrum, even without placing judgment on it, but there's a sort of spectrum of acceptance. Like it doesn't, there doesn't have to be malice for there to be
no,
to, discomfort. You know what I mean?
No, no. It was just, and this is probably true for any kid that has like a special interest that they're like really passionate about that, you know, no one else in their family has. Like, I'm sure you can talk to, you know, straight musicians or whatever. It's just like, but then that sort of instills in you this idea that like, you need too much.
I think a lot about my own trans kids who are, you know, pre-adolescent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like, there's a part of me that desperately wants to teach them to take care in the world to protect themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another part of me that desperately wants to fight that so that I am not teaching them
to hide themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I imagine that for a, you know, small femi
mm-hmm.
non-binary kid, even with non-malicious, generally supportive family members, you are kind of caught in that web.
Yes, absolutely. Like just little things about like don't tell your dad, you know, like little things like my mom trying to protect me, but just then that sending the message of like, okay, I can't have a coloring book. Or like I have to hide that because it has a Barbie on it or something. Yeah. But I guess home should probably be the place where you feel the most safe and seen rather than where you like they're going to learn the rules of society in school, out or like online, everywhere. Yeah. You gonna cry? Just kidding. Sorry.
Finally, you're expressing your two identity as a bully.
As a bully. Aw. Yeah. You care
Stop
about your
cyberbullying
kids,
me.
Loser.
Cole.
Yeah.
Have you ever been able to contextualize for yourself your extraness as courage, like the fact that you want to put on a hoop skirt, like a 19th century yeah. ball gown? And
no, it doesn't feel like courage because it's just what I want. It's just what I want to do. It doesn't feel like courage. It just feels like like, well, yeah, why wouldn't I? It's what I want to do. It's like, is it courageous to like order noodles for dinner? No, that's just what you wanted. So yeah, I don't know.
Do you think that what you are describing is brattiness? I'm worried that you do.
Do I think that's brattiness?
Because you described yourself as bratty, and I was like, "Oh no,
no, I'm a brat in other ways, but no, I don't think that's brattiness. I think that's just having a gorgeous vision for a creative project."
Has it been hard for you to figure out what the mode of your art is?
Yes. But that's like, this play is sort of a peak of sorts of like, this is like the concluding chapter of this section of my life and work as an artist. This feels like the culmination of my monthly solo sketch shows that I used to do at the Duplex. And then, you know, one person shows at Joe's Pub or like the shows I like, and my time in writers' rooms and my time acting in other people's projects. Like this feels like the thesis based on those, like, whatever. I guess I started in like 2007. So, yeah.
I mean, there's like a version of your career where you're doing character sketch stuff on the internet, which is like a pretty well-defined lane. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of people who are successful to one degree or another doing character comedy to camera on the internet, right? For whatever their specific lane of people is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you, in doing sometimes even really silly characters like Mary Todd Lincoln, like, it's clear that you wanted to give them a full narrative exploration.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Like, you could just go ahead and do 4-minute internet sketches or 90-second internet sketches. Mm-hmm. And even before this show, you know, you were making essentially television pilots for television shows that would
don't
be
exist.
Really, really hard to get to become television shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, for which there is no lane on television at this time.
Correct. Correct. And nor will there ever be. But I took my solo sketch stuff sort of as far as I thought I could take it. And then the idea of doing a play really scared me in the exact right way, where I was like, well, this will make me grow because it's really scary.
Was it because of the character and narrative elements? Because you had to write things for a group of people and the, you know, financial stakes are necessarily higher? Was it, what was it?
All of those things. You know, I wanted to make sure that the roles that I wrote for the other characters were good, not just like setting me up, that they were good roles for those actors. Just the financial. This is the first thing that I've ever done that's ever been produced by someone not myself. So, yeah, there's the financial stakes and just feeling like an intruder in theater a little bit, like the fear that people would be like, "What are you doing? You can't do theater. You don't belong here." And the opposite's been true. Everyone's been so nice. I always I give everyone no credit ever. I always expect the worst out of everybody.
We'll wrap up with Cola Scola in just a minute. Their play Oh Mary is a very silly and very funny play, and so it was natural that I asked Cole if they ever thought they might write something not silly, and the answer is no. We'll talk about why after the break. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, MassMutual. According to Calendar.com, the average person schedules just 4.5 hours per year on finances. MassMutual gets it. Life is busy. If you can't find time to plan your financial future, find someone who can. Like a MassMutual financial professional. For the last 170 years, they've helped people plan for retirement, college tuition, and any other short or long-term financial goals. Learn more at massmutual.com.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
Do It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Cole Escola. They're starring in the upcoming Broadway show, Oh Mary.
Have you ever imagined a world for yourself where you are a theater actor, where you...
Not a theater actor, but a theater writer. Like, this play has really shown me how much I love theater. I do love acting in theater, but I especially love writing in theater, and I especially love words are just so much more important in theater than they are on a like for TV or movies. Dialogue is like fourth or fifth after like cinematography, or like first is editing, then cinematography, then directing, then acting, and then finally like dialogue. And I feel like I still haven't really, maybe someday I'll try to crack writing for the screen, but I feel like I haven't done a great I haven't proved myself to myself in that medium.
Do you aspire to do something that isn't silly?
No, not at all. I don't need to have like that. I'm not interested in that. Like, I want people to take me seriously as, I always put something, I try to put like heart into all of my projects, and but no interest in doing something that's not silly.
I mean, this is what, like, even I don't, it doesn't have to be the Fisher King. Like,
right.
it could be, broadcast news or When Harry Met Sally or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure, like, sure.
There's things that are fun comedies that are not silly.
Yeah. I guess I have thought about like a rom-com, like maybe that would be a good next project for me in terms of like film or TV. I just don't think visually. I'm not a, like, I don't have a director's brain or a cinematographer. I think so much in words, and everything ends up being so word heavy. And then I get into the edit and I'm like, well, this is so boring.
I'm anticipating people imagining me to be anti-silliness. And I just really want to emphasize that all I really want in the world is like to watch the guys from Stella say words wrong. Like, mm-hmm. Silliness mm-hmm. is, I live for it, okay, everybody? Yeah. I live for it.
Let's get out ahead of that, please. Please. please apologize to the silly community.
Can I play something really, really silly that you made? This is from a sort of comedy special that you made called Help, I'm Stuck. Uh-huh. And this is a noir that is... built around Jennifer Convertibles, the sofa bed store, and her rival, who is also her sister-in-law, Ashley Furniture, the non-sofa bed furniture store. Let's listen.
Hello, Jennifer.
Oh, my Ashley, what a surprise. I thought I heard the garbage truck outside. I didn't realize it made deliveries. My, what a hat. Are those real slices of ham?
They're silk roses, Jennifer.
Well, whatever they are, it's covering your face, so by all means, please keep it on.
After all these years, you're still jealous, I see.
Jealous? Of the you make?
Oh, face it, Jennifer. People associate my name with quality furniture.
Yes, they do associate your name with quality furniture. Because you're built like a couch.
You know, I read an article that was describing the interior of your apartment and mentioned a life-size cutout of Bette Davis, who is, of course, like... just the absolute archetypal show business diva, like larger than life, extraordinary, you know? And you know, maybe like alongside like Judy Garland and Liza Minnelli, you know, like just like mm-hmm. the true classic of that genre of person. And I was thinking about I watched The African Queen recently, and like Hepburn is, who's also sort of in that lane, completely ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. like just, it's absurd that a human being would behave that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it is the greatest thing, like truly spectacularly great.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about like, what is it about this thing that is so absurd as to be embarrassing that makes it perfect instead of embarrassing? And it is, I mean, obviously part of it is she's a brilliant actor,
mm-hmm.
but it's also like this feeling of, that you reflect in, of self-actualization.
That, yeah, it's also style. It's just like a different style. It's stylized in a way. And then in the, you know, the like the 60s and the 70s, when things got more natural, that was just like, that's a different style. Although it's funny, you know, like Bonnie and Clyde is like, you know, always referenced as like the turning point, you know, and but Faye Dunaway is pretty style, like kooky character.
You mean like as a human being?
As a human being, but also as an actress, everything's very grand.
I mean, like, I think that those characters appeal to a lot of young gay men for the reason that they are unconcerned with their effect on the world or proud of their effect on the world. When I think for a lot of young gay men, it having that effect on the world can be scary and dangerous.
Well, it's also, I was thinking about that in terms of like, why do gay people love like female villains so much? And I think it has to do with expressed femininity. Like, they are so in control of their femininity and like and use it and execute it. And like the heroines, like your Ariels in The Little Mermaid, are not allowed. They're accidentally feminine. They're not in control. It's just sort of like, oops, my boobs are out. Oops. Like, I'm just innocent, like completely stupid to their femaleness and their femininity. And so these like female villains are just so in control of like their like liquid female movements, and their like their makeup is always like much more intense, and like they get to really take ownership of their like femness, you know, like high femness. And I think at least that's what appealed to me. Like, when I think of my favorite character in The Little Mermaid, was obviously Ursula, and especially Vanessa when she transforms herself into that seductive, beautiful woman far over Ariel, you know.
I like the crab, the singing crab.
Yeah, exactly. There's something for everyone. A little something for the dads.
I think it is an interesting, like slightly different thing for a kid who is growing up trying to be really careful of their extraness.
Femininity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like those two things are not the same, but they're tied together, right? The femininity and the being a lot, like worried about being a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Being a lot and being like being too femme. Like, just like there was so many years where I was just like, don't move too much. Like, just walk slow, move as little as possible. Don't talk too much because your voice is a giveaway. Yeah.
Do you feel differently about that now as a grown adult with the right pronouns and some show business success? And
No, I think I still move through like social situations with that same discomfort and awkwardness, shyness, I guess, a little bit. I don't know.
Are you holding back during this conversation?
Probably, yeah. What do you think of that, listeners? I also have a show tonight. I've got to save it for the stage, you know. I'm not getting paid for this.
I understand. And I appreciate your time, Cole.
Thank you.
It's so great to get to talk to you, and I admire your work so much. I hope people will go see your show because it is so funny.
Thank you. Thanks, Jesse.
Cole Escola. If you are able to get out to New York City or you already live there, do see them in Oh Mary. It is so funny. If you can't, understood. Make sure to check out Cole's social media because they have been posting amazing, brilliant character work there for years. That is so funny. And if you want to watch a TV show, man, they sure were great on Difficult People. Great show, too. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Here at my house, I'm still working on my office shed, but it was my birthday, and the staff of Maximum Fun were nice enough to get me a little tiny needlepoint that says, "Shed, sweet shed." Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer, Kevin Ferguson. Our producers, Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Danielle Huesias. We get booking help from Merritt Davis. Our interstitial music is by DJW, also known as Dan Wally. Our theme song is called Huddle Formation. It was written and recorded by the band The Go Team. Thanks to The Go Team. Thanks to their label, Memphis Industries. Bullseye is on Instagram. We have pictures from behind the scenes and videos and more. Follow us there at Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. I am also on Instagram. I just started my own Instagram account here in 2024. I had one for my menswear blog before, but this one's for radio stuff and podcast stuff. It's at Jesse Thorne Very Famous. So please follow me at Jesse Thorne Very Famous on Instagram. And you see pictures of me and our guests and also my dog. I guess that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Allianz Travel Insurance. Whether you're planning a weekend away or an international adventure, All Trips Annual Travel Insurance can protect every trip you take for the next 365 days. Get a quote at AllianzTravelInsurance.com. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Last year, over 20,000 people joined the Body Electric study to change their sedentary, screen-filled lives. And guess what?
We saw amazing effects.
Now you can try NPR's Body Electric Challenge yourself. Listen to updated and new episodes wherever you get your podcasts.